What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Active Life Podcast. I'm Dr. Sean Pastuch, and I'm your host, and we are back. We took a little bit of a break. We wanted to recollect ourselves, put some good content together for you, and make sure that this podcast is going to be a valuable asset to your daily routine when you listen to it. This season, we're going to have a bunch of fun stuff coming to you. There's a bunch of monologues that I'm going to be doing. There's going to be some stuff with the guy who's on with me today, Dr. Ray Gorman, our director of staff at Active Life, as well as some of my colleagues and some of my mentors. So I'm very excited about the next few months of this podcast for you guys. As always, a little bit of homework before you get started. If you like the podcast, please make sure you're referring a friend to it. Today's especially, I think, is going to be valuable for those of you guys out there who are coaching in group fitness facilities, whether it's a CrossFit gym or you're a dance coach or you're a yoga instructor. If you're teaching more than one person at a time, today's podcast will be very, very, very valuable to you. If you're somebody who's in one of those facilities as an athlete, it will give you some unique perspective as to what your coaches are going through on a day-to-day basis and how you can be a better communicator to them to give you more opportunity to be successful. So I'm really excited about it. As you guys might already know, we have some workshops coming up in November. On November 10th and 11th, my birthday weekend, I'm spending my birthday with a bunch of our staff members, including Ray Gorman. And somewhere between 0 and 60 coaches at CrossFit Mayhem, where we're going to be putting on an athlete workshop, a coach workshop. And then again, the following week, we're going to be headed to Behemoth CrossFit in Cypress, Texas, working with Asia Bartow and his crew, up to 30 coaches in Cypress. So we're excited about our workshop schedule. If you guys are interested in signing up for a workshop, just head to activeliferx.com/quicklinks, and they're all going to be right there. You can click on workshops right there. Let's get right into the material for today. I don't want to keep these guys waiting too long. So, Dr. Ray Gorman, welcome.
Thanks, Sean. How you doing?
I am doing well. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Great is how I want to hear it. That's awesome. What makes it great? What makes you great today?
Man, you know, it's a good day. Getting close to the end of the week. Was a very successful week for a lot of things. I feel like we got a lot of good knowledge out there. And so I'm just excited to get this podcast going and get a little bit more out to coaches.
It's funny that you say it's close to the end of the week because you get to dictate your week.
I do. And so for me, actually, I took an extra day off. So I'm going to be off tomorrow as well. So I can't complain about that. That is one of the nice parts of being able to create my own schedule.
I'll say this, and I'm curious to your opinion about this, but as somebody who has the complete autonomy to make my own schedule like you do, it sometimes is frustrating for me that I have to fit my schedule within the confines of Monday to Friday, because that's when anyone who is going to do business is available to do business.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I just want to work on Saturday and Sunday because I have more energy on those days sometimes.
Yeah, I hear you. I worked until about 10 last night, not because I had to, but because I wanted to. And it's just nice to be able to do that and not have anybody, you know, breathing down my neck for it.
Yeah. 10 o'clock.
I think I was still texting you, so you were probably.
That's possible. That's possible. I'm trying to think of what time I stopped last night. And you know, it's funny because I don't start my real work day. Like, I have kind of my creative time is between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. because we have a nanny who comes to the house during the school year. My wife is teaching. She gets here at 8. And I like to spend that first hour of my day with my kids. Between, you know, 7:30 and 9 o'clock or so, drive my daughter to school. But then after that, from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock, I keep to myself. That's when I do my writing. It's when I work out. It's when I go for walks. It's when I think. And then from 11 o'clock to 5 or 5:30 is really when I get everything done. But then there, like, I feel like when you're in this business, when you're in the business of coaching people, helping people, you know, anything that you're really passionate about, it doesn't go away. You know, like, I'm texting with you last night because an idea comes up and we're like, let's explore it. Let's talk it through. Hey, a staff member needs help with this. Let's talk it through. And it's enjoyable. It's not work. It's just like, that's what I want to be doing at that time.
Yeah. I mean, for me last night, it was something came up with a client and I wanted to get it off my plate right there. I thought that it was really important that I have the action plan set up for today and not waste any more time. So it was like, let me just get this over with and move on.
Well, yeah, and I mean, to me, I love that that's in your, it's an opportunity that you have. You don't have to do absolutely. That if you want. You could have put it off till tomorrow, and some people probably absolutely. Would have. And there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, I'm with you. I just like to be in it. But so I thought that would be an interesting, you know, that actually works out as a nice segue, because I think that a lot of people who are going to be listening to this are either members of a group fitness gym, like a CrossFit gym, or coaching at one. And in those people's situations, largely, they don't have the autonomy of time the way that you or I do. And that's just the nature of their job. It's the nature of our job. It's the nature of their schedule. It's the nature of ours. And that's fine. It doesn't make them good, bad, or anything. But I think that for a lot of coaches, speaking specifically about coaches, there is a level of frustration that I sense just through my Instagram and the DM that we get on Active Life RX and on my Sean Pastuch Instagram, where they're working all of these hours. They're coaching 15, 20, 25 hours in a week with their clients, and they're not seeing the kind of change that they want to see in them. And they don't have the time or energy outside of the gym to solve for those problems, because now they have other responsibilities they need to be taken care of. And while we can't solve for all of that stuff for coaches, I think that a conversation between you and I that they get to listen into, would that be you and me? Yeah, between you and me, that they get to listen into, I think could be really valuable, because there's some clients in the gym who need to modify. And when I say modify, I don't mean weight. They need to modify range of motion or movement type. And for some of them, that will always be the case. They're never going to change the fact that they need to modify in some way, shape, or form. They might be able to progress to a different modification, but they will always need to modify. And then there are other athletes who absolutely stand a great opportunity to be able to change the way that they move and not need to modify at all over time. But having been through my CrossFit level one twice, not because I failed, because I had to renew it, because I'm semi-OG. Having been through, you know, my personal training certification, been through Equinox Fitness Training Institute, you know, being a chiropractor in my father's clinic and my own clinic for years, nobody teaches you how to differentiate which athletes are going to need to modify for the long term, which athletes can be intervened with and get rid of the modifications altogether, and how to have those conversations. Now, since you've been a physical therapist at Division I University in the NCAA, you've been a physical therapist in your own clinic, you've been a CrossFit coach in a gym, I feel like you're the best person to have this conversation with, not to mention you're the director of staff for Active Life.
True.
So where would you start talking to a coach about, you know, how are we going to decide who is going to need to modify forever and who's not?
The first thing that I think is really important to identify is when we're talking about coaches in a gym, they're really our first line of defense for developing any sort of musculoskeletal issue. Now, the paradox of that is probably the most common injury that we see is a result of programming or overtraining. So you've got this first line of defense, but you've also got kind of a cultural issue of volume and, you know, even the word modification, the stigma that's attached to the word modification becomes really tough for some athletes when all they want to do is workouts RX. So when I'm having conversations with coaches, the first thing that I want them to do is have a movement screen. We get the movement screen so that we can see what ranges of motions are available. Once we know the ranges of motions that are available, we're able to create movement patterns for that client without giving them arbitrary standards. So an ass to grass squat for somebody who has zero ankle range of motion is not going to be something that happens. They're going to get into that position. They're going to fall backwards. They're going to fail. It's just not what we want to set that athlete up to do. So we're giving them the opportunity to now customize instead of modify workouts for their clients.
Okay, so I want to dig into a few things you said there. I think a lot of coaches will misunderstand the meaning of overtraining.
Sure.
So some, you know, you look at the guy who comes to the gym 4 days a week, trains for an hour and goes home. Let's just break that down first. How is it possible that that person who is feeling pain could be suffering from overtraining? They work out 4 hours a week.
The classic example is somebody who comes in and it can be anything, right? An hour might be too much to start, but it's too much too fast after doing too little for too long. That's a really big thing. Somebody who comes in off the street, and let's say they're in week three of working out 4 hours a week, they start to develop an elbow or shoulder issue. If they didn't work up to that intensity that we often see in CrossFit, even though the volume seems relatively low to everybody else in the gym, it was a big spike for that person. So starting, you know, one of the things that I always ask at our seminars that we do, and we have a group of coaches, and it's who in your gym teaches intensity? We teach movement, but do we teach what it's like to move at a 5 out of 10 RPE or 50% of what your available energy is? You teach what it's like to move at an 8 out of 10 RPE. Have your clients ever done Fran with a goal of a time instead of as fast as possible, meaning you're not trying to do this in 3 minutes, you're trying to do it in 7, just so that they can feel what the workout feels like at different paces.
So to branch off of that a little bit, to expand a little bit wider, what you're explaining is the person who joins the gym and 3 weeks, a month later, they're in pain.
Sure.
What about the person who's been coming 4 days a week for the last 3 years? Right. They've developed, maybe it was a spike early on, but they got through it and they survived and their risk was averted.
Right.
But now it's been 3 years and they're coming 4 days a week for an hour and their shoulders are starting to hurt. How is it possible that that person is overtraining if their training volume hasn't spiked to the naked eye?
Yeah. So to the naked eye, if you're looking at just from a macro perspective, you're looking at the hours trained. If you're actually going in and auditing programming, it's what does that programming look like day to day? Was Monday pull-ups? Was Tuesday push press? Was Wednesday toes to bar? Was Thursday thrusters? Is that what their week looked like, right? And is that a common theme over a cycle of a program, because that is what the gym is focusing on or that is what the coach deems as a priority for that client? And then do we let that kind of get out of hand?
So assuming well-rounded programming, because now the next thing that's going to come up is any coach listening to this is like, well, I would never do that.
Yeah.
So now how does somebody who's in the gym 4 days a week on well-rounded programming run themselves into the ground with overtraining?
Well, a well-rounded program is great for a well-rounded athlete. But somebody who is not well-rounded might need a little bit more of a bias towards one program to another. If, for example, your gym is squatting twice a week and you already have a squat-dominant athlete, we would want to have them on a track that was a little bit separate. Let's say that they're deadlifting because they need that in their programming more so than they need squatting, or they need a unilateral variant like a step-up.
So I'm gonna pick off on that, make sure I understood what you said.
Go ahead.
Somebody can be what you're suggesting, and obviously I know what you're suggesting. I'm trying to spell this out to our listeners.
Yep.
But what you're suggesting is that somebody can be preferential, if you will, to squatting. They'd rather squat than deadlift. Their body is better built for squatting than it is for deadlift. And they're doing things in the right ratio throughout the week of squatting to deadlifting for a normal average individual, which they're not. So because they're not the normal average individual, their body, which is already going to bias all of its biomechanics towards squat patterns, is now getting reinforced that we're going to need you to be good at squat patterns because we're squatting twice a week. Is that correct?
That would be correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So go on, please.
And their movement screen, the findings of that movement screen would then dictate the patterns that they're going to fall into.
Can you go on about that?
So somebody who has a tightness or shortness in their posterior chain, tightness meaning it's a sensation that they feel, but they just might not like getting there. Shortness meaning an actual range of motion limitation. If that person doesn't have the adequate range to hinge, they are going to fall into more of a squat pattern because that is going to decrease the load on the posterior chain. If, for example, their ankles have no dorsiflexion, their squat might start to look more like a good morning.
Hey guys, I hope you're enjoying this episode of the Active Life Podcast. Just a quick second to remind you here that we have so many resources available for you guys at activeliferx.com/quick-links. I'll make sure that's in the show notes, but we have workshops, we have online coaching programs that are remote learning. You can do it from anywhere in the world. We have more podcasts just like this one. We have our YouTube channel. We have programs that are templated up online. We are looking to change the world, and we need your help doing it. If you want to get out of pain without going to the doctor or missing the gym, we want to help you. Head to activeliferx.com/quick-links. I will put that in the show notes to check out all of the things that we have to offer. That's it. I'll get you right back to the show right now. All right, so let's I want to back off a little bit and break down what you just described for the people who are listening who maybe aren't coaches and are interested right now.
Sure.
What Ray is talking about is if your ankle doesn't go through full range of motion in the direction where your big toe is coming towards the front of your shin bone, that's dorsiflexion. It means, can you stand with your foot flat on the ground and bring your knee over the front of your toe in a lunge position, for example? That's measuring how much dorsiflexion your ankle has. If your ankle doesn't have a lot of it, or if it has an extremely limited amount of it, your ability to get into the proper biomechanical position to squat is not there. So you're going to have to compensate the shape of your body to perform the movement that somebody else could do ideally. And what it might start to look like is a good morning, which is essentially a hinge with a barbell on your back. So it's like a deadlift that's loaded from the top for people who are unfamiliar with the movement. And the reason why that would happen is to shift the bar forward so that you don't fall backwards due to the lack of range of motion in your ankle.
Correct.
Now that I hijacked your message, go ahead and continue, please.
No, that was perfect. And so basically what that is going to do is, one, athletes are going to be pushed into those positions because of, like you said, the biomechanical factors. The other thing that we see is, I mean, athletes like to do well when they come into the gym. So when it's a squat day and you have a squat dominant athlete, that athlete's going to smoke that workout, right? It might be a big ego hit when there is a deadlift workout. And so then we start to see these patterns of, well, I'll go on this day, I won't go on that day. And so now you start to even over bias your already positional biases.
One of the things that I actually find most interesting in that case is when it's not the ego necessarily, but the athlete who experiences a little bit of back pain when they deadlift.
Sure.
And they're like, well, it doesn't hurt to squat, but it does hurt to deadlift. So I'm going to skip deadlifting day, or I'll squat instead when that's what I'm supposed to do. And what's happening in that case for athletes is they're further developing their bias. And it's because no one's ever taught them that a little bit of discomfort is not necessarily going to be problematic. It might actually be exactly what you need because your body doesn't want that discomfort. So if you're doing something that your body is able to tolerate but would prefer not to, the likelihood is your body's going to adapt so it doesn't need to do that in the future. And one of the ways to do that is to build strength in those positions.
Yeah, and so we call that a fear avoidance pattern, where the fear of the movement might actually be worse than the pain or discomfort that the movement itself would cause. And the hard part about that is you don't just go up to an athlete and say, hey, guess what? You're deadlifting today, right? The step one is gaining their trust. If you don't gain their trust, they are not going to listen, and they're going to be like, yeah, okay. And then halfway through the workout, they're going to swap and do what they want. But if we can break it down and say, look, I am going to build up your deadlift onto a rack where you're pulling from an elevated surface. So we're gonna lift you up 6 inches. We're going to lower your weight to 50% of what we would normally do. And we're going to start building your deadlift from there. In that 6 to 8 week time frame that we're working on that progression, the next thing you know, that athlete says, huh, my back hasn't hurt when I've been deadlifting. Well, now you've taken a weak and painful pattern. You've desensitized it, right? You've actually changed the way that their brain used the mechanics of that. And you created a strength. So now when they come up and see a deadlift, that emotional component that was associated with staying away from it is no longer there.
You know, it's funny you say that, because one of the things that I teach people who are in my personal and professional development mentorship, who are coaches at a CrossFit gym, especially like this specific audience, one of the things I teach them to do to increase buy-in from clients, to increase their one-on-one client sales, right? To do more one-on-one training sessions, to do more programming for clients, is I teach them to do a workshop. And where everyone who comes to the workshop goes through the movement screen that we teach people. Then, based on the results of the movement screen, they modify a workout written for the group, right? So it might be, for example, a workout with deadlifts, wall balls, and pull-ups, right? So that we're looking for full hip, knee, ankle range of motion. We're looking for lumbopelvic flexion range of motion. We're looking for shoulder flexion, right? And shoulder abduction. And what we'll do is we'll have the athletes who are at the workshop go through all of the tests, and anything that they're limited in, we then go ahead and change a little bit about what the workout's going to be for them based on their assessment findings. And the coach asks them before class, do you ever have discomfort in class? Yeah, I do. Okay, cool. We're going to make these modifications today. It's experimental. I don't know if you can hear my daughter screaming in the background, but this is what you get when your podcast studio is in your house.
Sounds like total meltdown.
It does sound that way. This is what you get when your podcast studio is in the house, guys. So those of you out there who want to start a podcast and have that be your business, I don't recommend setting it up in the home. But so the podcast is not our business, by the way. But so what we then do is, okay, do you experience pain when you do these exercises? Yes. We're going to do an experiment today. You're going to modify the exercises as so. The goal is for you to feel this way after class. We want you to feel like you're out of breath, like your arms are tired, your shoulders are tired, your back is tired, your legs are tired. You had a great workout. But I don't want you to have the pain. They go through this workout and they make the modifications. Maybe they're elevating the deadlift to a bumper plate, and they're doing strict pull-ups instead of doing kipping pull-ups, or they're doing pulls inverted on a barbell, right? That's in a rack, or they're doing ring rows instead of doing back squats, wall balls all the way down. They're doing wall balls to a target, or they're doing push presses and air squats to a target, whatever the case might be, right? And then after class, it's, hey, did anybody feel like that was a bad workout? Did anybody not feel like they're fitter now than they were before they started? Of course, nobody says yes. Everybody feels like it was a great workout. And then it's, okay, does anybody have the pain that they typically experience following a workout? Or does everybody feel great? Absolutely. Everybody feels great. And what you figure out very, very quickly is that the only reason, well, not the only reason, but a big reason why people push through that stuff in a regular class setting is the ego associated with doing things as they're written on a board.
Yep.
Right. How everybody expects them to be done.
And not agree more.
And so if people are willing to recognize the reason why they joined the gym in the first place, what their goal was, and I say this all the time to people, nobody joins a gym to get fit. People work out so they can do things fit people can do. Once they recognize that and they own that, then it becomes, okay, I'm going to come to class. I'm going to modify like this. But coach, what are the things I need to do so that in the future, one day I might not need to modify this? Because let's be real, we all have egos that we all want to feed. Right? I mean, part of the reason I work out is I want to look good in the mirror.
Right.
Period. I don't mind admitting that. I want my wife to be sexually attracted to this man. You know, why not?
Understandable, man.
I'm trying to look down and see 10 toes and everything else I got hanging down there.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not trying to have to peek over the front of my belly to see my man parts. But so ego is part of it and that's fine. But I know that in our immersion program, and for those of you guys who don't know, our immersion program is when Ray actually takes anybody who wants, really, but somebody really, it's only valuable for you if your ambitions are coaching fitness and you want to be able to correct strength imbalances and movement imbalances and pain that clients of yours have that doctors are unwilling or unable to solve themselves. You do not become a doctor because you took the immersion course, but you do become a more effective coach if part of the effective nature you want to have is corrective exercise. So I know in that course, right? And what is it 13 weeks now? Did we add a week? Still 12?
12 weeks. Yep.
Okay. So it's a 12-week course where Ray takes coaches essentially through the exact same initial onboarding process that we take our staff through. So when you're a doctor on our staff, just because you're a doctor doesn't mean you get to work for Active Life. You still have to go through this immersion program. In fact, we pull most of our staff from the immersion program. People pay to go through it. And then we end up hiring them as staff because they're standouts. But in that course, Ray, do you teach coaches how to identify the difference between a person who, frankly, will always need some kind of customization and someone who can have a change made to them?
That is actually one of the first things that we cover. So we need to figure out if something is modifiable or non-modifiable, meaning in this case, the way that I'm talking about it, meaning that it has an ability to change. Somebody who we screen their ankle dorsiflexion and they feel a stretch in their calf and they're short on their range of motion, meaning they don't achieve a full range of motion, we are going to be able to make a change to that. We want to eccentrically load that tissue, right? We want to spend some time going through the down portion of a calf raise. Somebody who does that and feels a bony block in the front of their ankle because they've had a history of ankle sprains that they never really rehabbed, we're probably not going to make as big of a change there. We have drills that we would use for that finding. But again, when you're communicating with your client, if you say, oh yeah, we're going to be able to get your ankle range of motion to here, you're not setting up a good relationship. You have to be honest with them. You have to gain trust by setting realistic expectations. So for the person who feels it in their calf, I'm much more confident telling them, yes, we're going to be able to get more range of motion. Person who feels it in the front of the ankle, it's, hey, look, you've got to do this 5 days a week. And if in 6 months nothing's changed, I'm not going to lie, I might not be that surprised.
And that to me goes to the, you know, a movement we might have somebody do for something like that, what you're talking about with a bony block or a ligamentous restriction in the front of the ankle, is they strap themselves to a rubber band, to an upright, and then they put the kettlebell in the front of their knee and they sit there for 15 minutes. I mean, that might be an exaggeration of time, but you know, they sit there for a while. And the idea is time under tension is likely what's going to be what makes that change in end range. But I so often see people doing a drill like that for years and having no change.
Right.
And which I, you know, what you want to say is, number one, is your restriction actually, is that the appropriate intervention for your restriction? And number two, if it is and it hasn't worked, why do you think it's going to?
Yeah. So, I mean, we get this ingrained right from the beginning. The corrective has to match the finding. If it is a weakness issue, you cannot stretch it. You have to strengthen it. If it is a flexibility issue, we want to eccentrically load it, right? We want to spend time kind of going through that end range of motion. So it's very important that we don't waste time, because you'll have clients, exactly like you said, 2 years in, they're working on their ankle mobility and nothing's changed. Like, you're wasting your time. Let's either figure out an effective way to do it, or let's move on and accept what it is.
And I think that for a lot of people, the waste of time is acceptable because they don't recognize the opportunity of having that time.
Correct.
You know, it's what could you be doing? Like, if you spend 10 minutes a day, people are like, 10 minutes, it's 10 minutes. Like, what can you loan me 10 minutes? If you spend 10 minutes a day doing something that is not effective for you, and you do that 365 days a year, 365 times 10 is 3,650 minutes. Divide that by 60, and you're looking at 60 hours. You took 2.5 days and wasted it. That's a lot of time. And I think that people don't recognize how important their time is. So in the immersion program, I like to throw myself in there as a provider of value. It's really you.
Yeah, you're in there 2 weeks.
That's true. But so in the immersion program, you're teaching coaches first how to decide if somebody's going to be able to make a change or not. Once you've taught them how, you know, that yes, okay, this person is going to be able to make a change, how is it possible? Because, you know, it's funny. I just spoke to somebody yesterday who was the mother of a prospective one-on-one client. And she's a chiropractor. And she's like, I don't understand how you're going to be able to help my son in a way that I have been unable to help him in person. And I'm his mom. How are you going to be able to help him from a distance, you know, online? What are you going to do that we haven't done? So how is it possible for you to teach a coach in 12 weeks? It's not that long of a time. I mean, I know it's exponentially longer than all the bullshit weekend seminars that people leave thinking that they're experts. But not to say that our workshop is a bullshit weekend workshop where people leave thinking that they're experts. But the idea of our weekend workshop, just so that you know, not to say it's better than anybody else's, although it is better than everybody else's, is we teach a very, very, very narrow range of material, and we teach it on a very deep level. So you only learn 9 assessments in 11 contact hours, and we go really, really, really deep into them. So part of the problem with workshops is they're too wide. They teach you too much, and then you can't apply any of it. But I'm on a soapbox. I'm going to get off of it. How do you teach somebody in 12 weeks how they can effectively, in a lot of cases, be more valuable to their clients than their doctor?
So it's going to be trial and error. I mean, you don't learn from always succeeding, right? You learn from making mistakes. And in the immersion, the programming assignments that we give allow a less aggressive approach to saying, hey, you're just going to go work with this person, trial number one, and see what happens, right? They're going to do an assignment. I'm going to review that. I mean, I'm far into this stuff, and I still make mistakes, and I learn from them, right? You just don't want to make that same mistake twice. But it's all going to build. It's going to start with, here's your assessment. Here is what the findings of that assessment mean. Your client is hypermobile. We do not want them to stretch because they feel tight. We want them to get strong and spend time doing holds. You need to have that information. When we talk about strength imbalances, we do not mean your rotator cuff is weak relative to your pec. We mean you suck at producing force on one side compared to the other. And so your right arm is doing all the work when you put a barbell over your head. Your right leg is doing all the work when you squat below parallel. And then it becomes, here is how you pick the lowest hanging fruit. These are the identifying factors that you are then going to create a program that is run remotely for your clients 3 to 4 days a week, 20 to 30 minutes a day, that is going to substitute for the things that they think they need, which they're getting from their gym, and are actually going to fill the holes and complement the things that are missing. So we're not trying to replace anybody. We are simply trying to say, here are the things that you need to work on if you want to do the reps.
And so what kind of changes can those coaches expect to see in the way that they would run a class, for example, with this knowledge?
Yeah, so we get this all the time is, how do I implement this in a class? And it's not taking your class through the entire movement screen. You might lose members that way.
You definitely would. I've done it. You would lose members.
So it's, hey, look, we're squatting today. We're going to look at your ankles and your hips, because those are probably the two most important things that we need to look at. There's a tape lying across the wall at 4.5 inches and 5.5 inches. For the guys, we want you to start at 5.5 inches. For the ladies, we want you to start at 4.5 inches. If you've cleared that test, you're good to go. If you were short on that test, mark where you were at and come see a coach for your modification. There's step number one. That literally took you 2 minutes. Number two is partner up. Take your partner's hip. Bring their thigh to their chest. Position one, position two, position three. Which one felt the best? Guess what? That's where your hips are going to be. That's it, right? That is the basic way to start with a squat. If we're doing it for a deadlift.
Well, instead of moving on to a different movement, I want to ask you, sure. Do you talk to the coaches in the immersion program? I actually haven't been in it in the early sessions and for a while. Do you talk to them about how to communicate to somebody who maybe they have limited ankle range of motion, but their squat is fine? Right. So I know that our rules as a company are not so rigid that if we want you to have 4.5 inches of ankle dorsiflexion and you have 2, but your squat looks beautiful and you're not experiencing any knee or hip or back pain, then squat. But how do you communicate that to the group in the immersion? Because that's a gray line.
Absolutely. We use what's called our lighting theory. So we've got a green light, yellow light, red light. Green light means you're good to go. Joint has full range of motion, no pain. Yellow light would be they have a limitation in that range, but there's no pain, or vice versa, right? Pain, but no limitation. The things that we want to do in that case are, we just want to monitor their exposure to movements. We want to say, hey, look, I just want you to keep an eye on this. I'm not worried about it yet, but if you were to do high volume squatting, running, jumping, that's going to be the time where we say, okay, are you absorbing force at the ankles in a way that is conducive to offloading your knees, hips, and back? And that's going to be it. We're not necessarily going to take it away from that person, because they also might have different lever lengths than everybody else. And we talk about that, right? What if somebody has a shorter lever length and they don't need as much dorsiflexion?
By lever length, you're saying that they have a short shin bone, for example.
Exactly. Exactly. So you're going to have to eyeball that person, right? You're going to have to say, okay, their squat looks good. They're not getting any crazy compensations. They're not off from one side to the other where it's causing a shift and then therefore causing a strength imbalance, which is then going back up the chain. Those are the kind of things that we're looking at and that we're teaching coaches to identify and have the conversations with their athletes on.
Yeah, one of my biggest frustrations with orthopedic assessments in general, whether it's in a physical therapy office, a chiropractic office, or a CrossFit gym, or a personal training session, is I think too often the person administering the test forgets that they're sensitive but not specific. Mm-hmm. Right? For sure. And what I mean by that is, if we ask somebody to go through a test where we're measuring their ankle range of motion, we'll just stay on that, and they don't have full range of motion and they do have knee pain when they squat, we can't jump to it's because of your ankle. We can clean up the ankle and say maybe it's because of the ankle. And if it gets better when the ankle's improved, then hey, let's see if that keeps it away. But it's just a piece of a much larger puzzle. And I think that that's where the yellow light for the clients who we work with comes in really valuable, because it's, hey, somebody might have full ankle range of motion and still experience knee pain when they squat. They might have full hip range of motion and still experience knee pain when they squat. And the opposite might be true. Somebody might be limited ankle, limited hip, and have great, no problem with their knee.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
So So there's always another variable. And I think that it's really important for coaches to understand that. And that's why the idea of somebody doesn't squat to depth effectively, give them squat therapy, is a terrible fucking idea. It's a terrible idea.
Yeah, you just go to timeout for 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, like, even if the whole class was doing it at the same time, and that's just what you were doing, your problem might not be solved by doing that. And if you do that for 10 minutes, 365 days a year, you waste 2.5 days.
Correct.
And you're really wasting more like a week of time that you're awake.
Correct.
That's fucking crazy.
Absolutely.
I mean, if we live 79 years, which is the American average, I heard that from somebody else, by the way. Jesse Itzler, one of my favorite people in the world. 79 years times 5 waking days, we waste 395 days of our lives. That's over a year that you just throw out doing stupid shit that you meant to have help you, but was not helpful at all. It's not just like you were watching TV, which some people could argue is not a waste of time because it's decompression and all that kind of stuff. No, you spent a year intentionally trying to do something that was either counterproductive or non-productive. How is that acceptable?
And this all just becomes down to being effective. One of the slides in our immersion course is literally says, effective coaches have effective solutions. That is the premise of it, right? That is the payoff to being an excellent coach, is that your client comes in and it's no longer what is the problem, it's what's the solution to the problem. Mm-hmm. For some people, that's going to be cleaning up the movement pattern, right? We might have to go all the way up to skill. For some people, it might be increasing the length that the ankle has. For other people, the solution might be modifying them to a box squat. Those are three very different scenarios that if you don't have all the pieces to the puzzle, you are just guessing to see which one works the best.
100%. And here's something that I want coaches to understand. This is more my part of the business, less Ray's part of the business, but Ray is coming around more and more and more and more to agreeing with me on this and being all in for it. I think you might actually be all the way there. The only reason to do something like our coach's immersion course, or to take your CCP with OPEX, or to go get your CrossFit level 2, or to go do any continuing education, the only reason to do that is to either widen your net for the amount of people who you can help, or deepen your net for the level of which you can help the people you're already helping. It's either to get more knowledge to help the same people in a deeper, more meaningful way, or it's to become more valuable and more available to a larger range of people. There is no reason to do either of those things and not see value in return above and beyond your emotional take home from it. What I'm saying is, if you get good at this kind of stuff, people will pay you to help them with it, because it costs them so much emotional energy. They would love to be rid of it. And if it costs them a few $1,000s, they're going to spend it. I say that knowing that a lot of the people listening to this are like, a few $1,000s to improve my ankle range of motion so my knee doesn't hurt when I squat. You're crazy. I'm not crazy. You might be the wrong audience. But ask your friend sitting next to you if they would do it. They're your friend, so they might be the wrong audience too. But you get the point. This kind of knowledge, any kind of knowledge you gain as a coach, makes you more valuable. In this country, value is measured, at least in part, by dollars. You can make more of them if you're a more valuable person to the audience you're trying to serve. Where are you at on that, Ray?
I agree with you 100%.
Nice.
I think part of it too is that we're not just going to give you this information and then say, here, business-wise, go figure out what to do with it. you're going to get that knowledge as well, because again, we don't want to create another problem for you.
That's right? True. I do a bad job of this, right? I was trying to soft sell people doing the immersion. I wasn't trying to say, hey, jump into it. You should, even though I believe you should jump into it. You should find the money that it costs to do the immersion program, because it will make you more money, make you more valuable, make your members happier.
Well, but what I want them to understand too is that it's not going to be buy our program and then you figure out what to do with it, right? It is, here are the steps of also how you make this valuable to your clients.
Yeah, we teach them the business side of it. We teach them how to turn this knowledge into money, for sure.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when it comes down to solving a problem, like I was saying, we don't want to create another problem and say, now go figure it out. Now you have the knowledge to, one, apply it in a business realm, and two, apply it in a tactical realm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I want people to know that they're going to get that.
I'm glad you brought that up. So for those of you guys out there, this podcast started as a how to scale and modify your clients and how to know if they can be scaled or modified differently as the future goes on and how to intervene. It ended up with us discussing our immersion program at depth, which I'm glad it did, because I do want you to take it. I do want you to be in it. I do think you'll become a better coach if you do it. And I do think your clients will be happier. And I know you'll make more money, which whether you say you care or not, doesn't matter. You don't care until you need it. And nobody minds getting paid more to do the same job. That's the truth, as far as I know. I don't know many people who've turned down a raise.
That is very true.
So for those of you guys out there who want to jump into the next immersion program that we're running, when is it, Ray?
It starts October 10th. And it is at 11 a.m. now.
11 a.m.? We moved it?
We moved it. So that way I could be in our staff meetings.
Oh, good idea. Yeah. So I thought our staff meetings are at 1.
Right. So I moved the immersion to be able to be at the staff meeting.
Are they 11 a.m. Pacific time?
Yes.
Okay.
October 10th, 2:30 p.m. Eastern.
There we go. That's the time. That's the time. So way off. So the next time.
But see, remember, I have this problem with time.
You were off by time zone and you were off by 30 minutes. So
yeah,
if you're interested in doing the immersion program, it is 12 live video calls with assignments every single week between those calls. You're going to be held accountable to stuff that you need to learn. Do not do this if you don't want to be a coach who coaches for a living. Do not do this if you're somebody who just wants to go in and coach class and let people rage. Do not do this if you don't want to have difficult conversations with your clients. And do not do this if you don't want to have to put extra work on your plate to unlearn things that you thought were true and learn things that are going to change the way you fundamentally think about movement. If you do want to change the way you think about movement, if you do want to impact your members and your clients on a deeper level, if you do want to become a viable alternative to going to the physical therapist for your clients, if you do want to get paid better to solve bigger problems for people in your community, sign up. activeliferx.com/quicklinks. I'll put the link in the bio. You'll be able to find it. You can sign up for our workshops there. You can sign up for the immersion program there. I actually believe, I haven't run this by you yet, Ray, but I think this is the last time I want to do the immersion at the price we're currently offering it at. So
I think so.
We've been offering the immersion program at $2,000 per person who's in it. And I believe that after this, we're probably going to be bumping that up to $2,500. So October 10th is your last chance to get it for $2,000. You have my personal guarantee that you're going to make that money back if you do what we tell you to do. Anything you want to drop in here at the end, Ray?
That is it, man. I think we covered everything.
All right, good. You can find Ray on Instagram at RayGormanDPT, or at one of our workshops, or on the Active Life RX Instagram account, or I'm going to sucker him into coming onto more podcasts in the future. Until next time, guys, remember, you got to turn pro. That's a wrap for another Active Life podcast, guys. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you're going to wherever you listen to podcasts and leaving us a 5-star rating and a review. We want to grow this thing. We want to change the world. It's not about movement. It is a movement. Please help us out with that. Remember, until next time, turn pro.